Selling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's time for Talking with TD.
Touchdown, Tennessee!
The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up a shut-up term.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Here we go. Yes, yes, you are now talking with TD. I am your host, Teron Davenport. We have Elijah Campbell over here hitting the switches, making this thing work. I'm excited to bring you this show just because it's been great seeing this team just have back-to-back outstanding victories. A lot of attention is going on to the work. So, hey, man, for selfish reasons, I'm obviously happy that this team has won. We have another game coming up this week where we'll get to see a tough opponent in the Indianapolis Colts for the Tennessee Titans. This is a division game, so you know it's a win here is a buy one, get one free. So obviously there's a lot of importance being placed on that. But Elijah, before we get into that, you know, talking to Chris Sanders and getting into the Colts team with my teammate, ESPN NFL Nation, Indianapolis Colts reporter Mike Wells, I want to talk a little bit about this Chiefs game. And I think it's only right that we wrap it up. I want to start with the offense, though, because, you know, that first drive, I like the fact the first play of the game, play action to A.J. Brown. This is something I've been kind of calling for quite some time, because you go into a game, what's happening? Teams know that you're going to look to run Derrick Henry. So what do? They sell out to do it. And that's really what was happening there. The front especially, you know, these guys were so focused on stopping Derrick Henry. There were opportunities for A.J. Brown. And A.J., to his credit, he shined. 8 receptions. He was targeted 9 times, 133 yards, a touchdown. You got to see the return of the Yak Monster, which is something that I personally have been waiting to see, because I think that's the best thing. That's his best trait, running through the football, making that catch. As Mike Vrabel said on Wednesday, he's fearless. He catches the ball with his hands, so you don't have to worry about it bouncing off of him as much. Because that's one thing as a receiver, running that slant, you don't body catch it. Because you body catch it, that slows you down. Even though one of the greatest ever, Michael Irvin, used to always do that, you don't do it. So don't imitate Michael Irvin. Imitate A.J. Brown in that case. But all jokes aside, it was good to see that resurface. Ryan Tannehill had the hot hand. He finished having completed 10 straight against the Bills in the second half, rolled that into the first half against the Chiefs, 11 straight, a total of 21 straight passes completed. I think that's something to look at. Just looking at that one-on-one coverage and taking advantage of that, that's a really big thing, because that's what you want to do. You want to look to your left or look to your right, because Julio Jones is out there too. I still, as a quarterback, I would say, hey, either side, I got the advantage in one-on-one coverage. You saw a lot of single high look from the Chiefs because they were dropping the safeties down in the box to, you know, one of the safeties down there to help defend the run. The 40 was a 42-yard completion. And this is something I said. They need to hit a couple deep shots, because this Chiefs secondary is very susceptible to a pass of 40 yards or more. They're the worst in the league at defending it, right? So you obviously need to do that. That's exactly what they did. Great job. And this is another thing that I really love to see. Before the game, I recorded it. A.J. Brown and Julio Jones, they're kind of just going back and forth, like hand-to-hand combat, just knocking and pushing, knocking hands down, pushing away, and just doing the things you have to do to maintain your balance and focus on the football while you're fighting for a position. And that was exactly what A.J. Brown did on that 41-yarder or 42-yarder. It's exactly what he did on the touchdown as well. So I always not smile about that, because I love to see the small things add up to something big. And in that case, it added up to a couple big things. So that was a really good job there by just the offense overall. They went tempo, create that sense of urgency. That's something else that I've said multiple times, that they need to come out with tempo. Come out with tempo, because that's what it does. This is a team that typically starts games flat, right? They lost the toss. The Chiefs deferred. They wanted to get the offense on the field first, right? Well, the Titans gave them what they asked for and more by driving down the field and scoring a touchdown. In total, Ryan Tannehill, 21 out of 27, 270 yards. One touchdown. One interception, which was egregious. But overall, his performance was good. And this is something that you want to see. This is this passing game on an upswing. Because I'll be honest, and I said it in a write-up with the power rankings, and I got a little bit of pushback. But Tannehill has slightly regressed. I don't care, you know, how big of a fan someone is or anything like he has regressed. His completion percentage is down from where it was before. His QBR is down from where it was before. There are some accuracy issues.
Which 2 years ago, I mean, those numbers were cartoonishly high.
Exactly.
Because that was nothing near what he was in Miami. So you always knew that eventually he would be in between what the last 2 years were and what his Miami years were. This is a reasonable regression. You just don't want that regression to go too far to where it costs you games.
Right, and I think the word reasonable or slight, these are things that have to be pointed out. I personally feel that the Tannehill that we saw last year is the one that we'll see going forward, and you're starting to see that open up a bit as far as him making plays with his legs, which makes him doubly dangerous. So those are some of the things that I wanted to get into from the offensive side of things. Obviously, Derrick Henry, he had his streak of 100-yard rushing games snapped, which, hey, you know, kudos to the Chiefs for that. He still got 86 yards. And I'll say this, and I on Monday, you know, when you guys had me on the show, I made the comparison to LeBron James. And that's what you're seeing. Like, you're seeing Derrick Henry, he may not statistically blow it up, but rest assured, he has an impact on the football game, right? As we mentioned, the play action, that's opening up. Why? Because linebackers are like, hey, man, I'm not going to let this Martian run all over us. So they're taking a step forward. It opens up the passing lane, makes things a lot easier. Windows are open. I think that's something to note. Todd Downing, the play design has continued to – I actually had a little back and forth with Coach Vrabel about that. But, you know, I compared it to the Cardinals game. But that's – I mean, look, I wanted to know the progress that he's made as the play caller throughout the season. So that's why I did that. But, I mean, obviously the play design is there, the calling. He clearly is in his groove, and that's a good thing. And that's what we saw Coach Arthur Smith do at times. I'm not saying Todd Downing is on Coach Art's level yet. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying that the comfort level seems to be there.
Or, like, my favorite part about Todd Downing's progression is the scripted plays. It's what? The first 15 to 20 plays of each game are usually scripted by the offensive coordinators and offensive coaches. And that's all work that is done in the week leading up to these games.
Yeah.
What did we see in the first 15 to 20 offensive plays against the Cardinals? It was incredibly predictable. It was bland. It was rough. And it didn't I get it. The offensive line doesn't help you out much. Mm-hmm. But one of the worst parts of that game was the play calling was predictable. And it was just real. It was really bland. It didn't free anybody up. And what did we see in the first 15 to 20 plays of this Chiefs game? Where he absolutely had a week to do it and tore up that Chiefs defense in those scripted plays. That, to me, is the sign of a well-prepared offensive coordinator going on throughout the year.
And the thing is, just to take that to another level is, a lot of the plays were scripted. But the thing that I like is situation-wise, things changed. Mm-hmm. Like, that Derrick Henry pass was not scripted, you know what I mean? But he called that because that was what they had. Michael Pruitt said they've had it in the call sheet for 2 years. They've worked on it. I mean, it goes back to that 2019 season. But just having that up, okay, look, man, short yardage, goal line, this is one of the plays, boom. And then he called it very timely there. So excellent job just by the offense as a whole. Yes, it would definitely be good if you get more from Julio Jones. You get more from Michael Pruitt actually played well. You get more from Firkser. I get it. And that's something that we'll definitely focus on. But you flip it to the other side. 3 points. That is the lowest total the Kansas City Chiefs have had since 2012 when they lost 38-3 to the Denver Broncos. That 27-point deficit that they were facing at halftime was the largest since 2016 when the Steelers had them up 29-0. This defense showed up. Kevin Byard, the forced fumble, right? And it's funny because I talked to him that Tuesday before the game, and he said, and it was actually, I was talking to him as well as Josh Norman on Josina Anderson's show, and he said that he wanted to work on punching the ball out, and he asked Josh Norman jokingly asked him for some tips. Josh Norman responded by asking him for some tips on tracking the football and getting interceptions. Guess what happened? Forced fumble by Byard. Josh Norman had a pick against the Colts. So that's pretty interesting. I don't know if it got called back or not, but he did get a pick. But either way, the turnovers are starting to roll in, and that's a very good sign for this defense. I want to talk about that front, though. 18 pressures. They only had to blitz once. They also came up with a new idea. In addition to T.R. Tart doing his thing and Murchison doing his thing, right? They came up with something different. It's actually featured in Whiteboard Wednesday. Make sure you check that out. Bud Dupree and Denico Autry lining up on the outside. Jeffrey Simmons on the interior. Harold Landry just a little bit off the ball on the interior as well. I asked Bud Dupree about that after the game because I just wanted to know, you know, some of his thoughts, because they also do a lot of stunts in games. So I was curious how that whole process carried out. Here's what Dupree had to say when I talked to him about it.
We just can't pinpoint what we're going to do, where we're going to be at. That's what makes it special. You know, Denico is one of the kind of guys that works outside. Jeff is a bruiser. You know, Jeff's going to dominate every time he gets, every chance he gets. He's going to be a very powerful human being, man. He's just one of those people. But you know, Harry's going to come with speed. Me and Harry both.
When you guys get to those games and the twist that you and Howard are able to do, like, do you guys, is there communication before there, or like, how do you go about that process?
Yeah, we talk about it beforehand, and we'll know going to the game. We'll try to see exactly what we can do on those guys, especially when you're in front like that. With a quarterback like Mahomes, you know, when he escapes, it turns into a big play capability. So, you know, we've been playing those type of guys early on in the season. Starting with Arizona, Seahawks, him, Josh Allen, you know, man, even young boy, the Jets, you know, those guys, they escape and they're making plays on the field. So, you know, we got to be able to contain them and keep a lead on them.
There you have it right there, the communication that goes into just the timeliness of the stunts and those things. So that's obviously a big part. But one of the things to look at, and I explain it in the video, just with how they're lined up, there are gaps that open up, but when you have linebackers at that second level of the defense that play like David Long is playing, that are so slippery, you're able to still have those gaps. You're able to have those stunts and not worry about, you know, a guy not being there to clean up if something should overflow. That's what David Long is bringing to the table. He's just playing with speed, excitement, energy. I love it. So it was great that he was asked on Wednesday just what is behind the passion that he plays with. I love his answer. Check this out.
We'd be here all day, man, if I told you where it comes from. But I just think, you know, it comes from, you know, how I grew up, you know, my highs and lows, you know, just comes out on the field, you know. Obviously, I'm pretty, you know, quiet over there, but on the field, it's just different, you know. I can let all that out, you know, all that, you know, the road it took me to get here. So well, that's why I let it out.
So many people overlook the fact that football for a lot of these guys is therapy. You know, it's an opportunity, as he said, to let it out. And there's a lot of aggression and competitiveness and energy and stuff like that that these guys do have the opportunity to just get out of their system. And that's one of the things so many guys love so much about the game. So I'm glad that he mentioned that, and he's playing like a possessed man. Like, he's playing like his pants are on fire. And it is just lots of fun. I posted a tweet. I don't know if it was, yeah, it was during the Chiefs game. You know, I said every week I watch David Long, and I just love the way he plays. Very instinctive, smooth. He's a natural at linebacker, and he continues to do it, the punch out. You know, just the ability to know that, hey, you know what, I've watched film and saw when Mahomes runs this way, he still will throw it across his body. So let me make sure that I plaster. Oh, he's throwing it. Having the timing and hand-eye coordination to punch that thing out. Rashad Evans making the diving catch. Ironically, the two combined last year or 2 years ago on a turnover where David Long had a forced fumble. Evans picked it up and scooted to the end zone. So it was kind of a deja vu thing minus the touchdown. But still, I think this Titans defense is starting to come around. Mike Vrabel had talked about Jim Schwartz and the contribution that he's making. He said it's going just as smoothly as he thought it would. There's no too many chefs in the kitchen kind of thing. Everything is looking good. So let's see what happens as they roll over to the Colts game. It's obviously a different attack. You got Jonathan Taylor, who could legitimately run the football. Carson Wentz is playing better. No ankles sprained, you know, plural, which is still, like, I laugh at that, man. Like,
that's got to be a record. Yeah, I mean, you can only break or sprain two at once, but he managed to do it.
He was on the injury report with two sprained ankles. I mean, that's crazy. But, hey, he's not on there anymore. So this is going to be a huge test. It's an opportunity for the Titans to take a pretty strong lead in the AFC South Division. We're going to go ahead and go to a break. I will be right back, and we'll have Chris Sanders. But that's only after we pay these bills. Hey, it's Teron Davenport. You ever had to sit and wait for 2 hours or longer to get new tires put on your car? Well, you don't have to do that anymore. Call my friends at Freedom Tire Guys. They're Nashville's premier mobile tire company that does it all. New tires, balance, rotation, everything. And they come to you. Your work, your job, your house, you name the spot. Head online to FreedomTireGuys.com, fill out their tire calculator, pick your new tires, and schedule your service date. It's that easy. If you don't see something you like, give them a call, and they'll find it for you. Check them out today at FreedomTireGuys.com.
This is Derrick Henry. You're now talking with TD.
You already know. Guitars, please. Yeah. All right. Back from the break, talking with TD. You hear the music. Yeah. You know what time it is. Uh-oh. Dim the lights.
It is.
Fade the music. Yeah. And now, starting for your New York Knicks at point guard, number 50, Greg Anthony.
And now,
oh boy,
your basketball coach for the Arkansas Razorbacks.
Don't do it.
Nolan Richardson. Man, his hairline was back so far, man, he could salute the Army if he'd be in trouble.
But why did he have that little mini afro that looked like this microphone cushion, though? What's going on, man?
Man, I'm good, man. What do you think about that crazy game, man? Is the Titans for real or what? What you think?
Oof. You know what? I'll tell you one thing that's for real about them, and that's the ability to play up to the competition.
Absolutely.
Man, oh, man. They came out. I picked them to win. I definitely picked them to win. But the thing that I love, they came out in tempo, created that sense of urgency. That first drive, they went down the field and scored. Yep. And they took away just that whole – fast break type of offense, you know, as far as feeling like they have to score every time that they got the football against the Chiefs. Ironically, they did that in the first half.
You know, it's funny because I talked to Jared. I do the pregame show on Sunday with Jared and Mark.
Yeah, I know. You guys talk to me sometimes, too.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. You crazy. But they always laugh at me when I always say the coin toss is so important.
Yeah.
Because, look, I'm going to break it down. Look at when the Tennessee Titans got the ball. They methodically went down the field. Who had the momentum? Look at the body language of the Kansas City Chiefs and look at the body language of the Tennessee Titans. They started fast. They had momentum. The Kansas City Chiefs, you know, got the ball. They got, like, I think, a three and out quickly. So how does that – the momentum was there because the Tennessee Titans started fast.
And not only was it a three and out, it ended with a sack from
That's
who?
What I'm saying.
Bud Dupree.
Bud.
That was a big time. That was a big time just start to that game. So definitely, you know, it's something that they're going to look to build off of and spin that into this week of practice. That momentum concept is something that, you know, if you pull away analytics and numbers and all that and look at just the nuts and bolts of football, momentum is real. A lot of the analytical guys will say that it's not and say that people that actually played football in a game are wrong when they say momentum is real, but it is real. And rolling that into this week against the Colts, this is a total different type of situation now because you got Jonathan Taylor who's running the football. And I let's say this. When we were doing our top running backs, neither one of us even thought of mentioning Jonathan Taylor.
No, I said he was number two.
Oh, you had him at number two?
I had him at number two. And you kind of like, remember?
You had Jonathan Taylor as number two?
I had Jonathan at number two.
Elijah's going to have to pull up the tape. Yeah. I'm going to have to check that one. So, well, tell me, what are your thoughts on him now? You know, after seeing him, you know, 569 rushing yards, I believe it is. The guy is getting used in the screen mm-hmm. game. Well, what's your thoughts on him?
He's playing with a lot of confidence, and he's playing to show the world that he's one of the best backs in the league. And it's not that he's just running a whole bunch of yards. He's catching the ball out the backfield. He's catching those screens and taking them 83 yards like he did against the Ravens. And then last week when he did against the 49ers, he had a long screen pass. So he's becoming a complete back. I know they're not spreading him out and running choice routes or anything, but he's catching those screen passes and taking over the game. I mean, just look at the Indianapolis Colts. When was the last time that they had a running back like this in a while? They haven't.
Yeah. That consent, a bell cow like this.
Absolutely. And the thing about it is, too, TD, he's physical now. He's a big dude.
Absolutely.
And he's going to run through your face. He's going to run through your face. He's going to run by you. He's going to catch the ball. And I'm not saying he's as good as Henry, but he's doing the same thing as Henry. He's taking over the game.
That's a great point because on Wednesday, I talked to Kevin Byard about that. You know, just what makes this game so much more physical than a lot of the other games that they play. And he said specifically that they use Jonathan Taylor and rely on him and allow him to set the tone the same way the Titans do that with Derrick Henry. So your analogy is spot on. That's an excellent point. And I think, you know, when you look at the three-headed monster aspect that you had mentioned with the Chiefs, well, they have that with the Colts, right? Because Marlon Mack is still a hard-running back. And Nyheim Hines is a problem. That's a Titan killer right there.
Yeah. And the thing about it is, you're not going to be able to do what you did against the Kansas City Chiefs, stay back and come out to make a tackle. You're going to have to put somebody in the box. You got to put safety up. You're going to have to blitz off the boundary. When I say boundary, that's a short field, short mm-hmm. side of the field.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to have to do some things to create some pressure and keep him from getting started and put some pressure on Wentz, because I'm telling you, these guys are playing with confidence. Well, I watched the interview, or when they was coming, or the, not even the interview, but when they were coming in the locker room and everybody was celebrating after they beat the 49ers. This is a confident team now. Even though their record is 3-4 and you know everybody was writing them off, they believe that they can win the next 10 games. That's how they believe.
Let me ask you this.
Sure.
Because you've been in this situation before. I would imagine what back then it was the Steelers, maybe the Jaguars.
Mm-hmm.
These rivalry games.
Oh.
Is there really a different vibe, extra level of juice in that week of practice and on game day?
Absolutely. I mean, it's the Pittsburgh Steelers. And every time I played against the Pittsburgh Steelers, I got hurt. I hurt my ribs, I hurt a foot, or I broke a finger. You didn't have to say anything. There was no joking in the locker room. There was no, you know, guys sleeping in the meeting. Those guys were focused because we understood that this is going to be a battle. We understood that you're going to get hit in the mouth or you're going to hit somebody in the mouth. And then we also understood this, TD, that every play counts. These teams know each other. The Tennessee Titans and Indianapolis Colts, they know each other. They're familiar with each other. They understand their tendencies. They understand what they're going to do on offense. But it's a matter of your will against my will, and that's what's going to set the tone.
Yeah, and that's really – man, you're kind of like speaking to me directly in the quotes that I keep gathering, right?
Oh.
Because Jeffrey Simmons, one of the things that I asked him was about Quentin Nelson and that opportunity to go against him. And he said that he's a great player. He loves going against great players because he feels that taking the next step as a great player, man, I say great players a lot, is going against great players. I'm going to say it one more time. So it's a big opportunity for him. And he said the Colts, they have a lot of faith in Nelson, and that's why they run the ball behind him. And if you want to point out those two, he said it comes down to who's going to play with more physicality and win that battle. And he said, I don't plan on losing it. So that's just like a nice way of just saying, like, bruh, I get it. He's a great player. I'm a great player, too. He's going to try to move me, but he ain't doing it.
but that's what we talk about, that every play counts. Every play is going to count. And you better believe that the Indianapolis Colts are mad about what happened the last time they played us. When Henry ran through Leonard's lips, ran through his face. You don't think he remembers that?
Right.
I'm telling you, as a man, as a competitor, as a guy who wants to win, you ran through my face. Oh, I'm coming harder next time. So you're going to have to bring it. So we always talk about a team that starts off with momentum and starts off with controlling, you know, the tempo of the game. That's the team that's going to win. So I think it's going to come down to this. It's going to come down. You have two great defenses. I think it's going to come down to the offense. Which quarterback makes the least amount of mistakes?
Yeah, and that's the big thing. Which quarterback makes the least amount of mistakes? I'm going to talk to Mike Wells, and one of the things, and Mike Wells is ESPN's NFL Nation Colts reporter, and one of the things that I want to get into is, you know, the whole, first I want to know if they're playing this song in the locker room, and it's Tina Turner, right? We don't need another hero. Because I think that's kind of like the mindset that Carson Wentz is starting to adapt. And yeah. I will tell you firsthand from covering the Eagles, his rookie year and his outstanding 2017 year, that guy always played hero ball. And it oftentimes led to interceptions. He, I think, led the league in interceptions last year.
Right.
So far, he has 10 or 11 touchdown passes to one interception. Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz has thrown one interception in 7 games. So you are absolutely right. It is going to come down to who is able to control the turnover margin. And the Colts defense, I mean, they've gotten, I think it's around 16 turnovers. So that's going to be huge.
And I think so, too, that, you know, they have confidence in their front four or whatever front they play, at the start of the game. You know, and I think sometimes they feel like they don't have to put an extra guy in the box.
Yeah.
They know that Buckner and those guys are going to get there. But I know they're going to do some things against Henry because Henry's been gashing them. But at the end of the day, these are two hungry teams.
Mm-hmm.
You got two hungry quarterbacks. You got two hungry receivers, Pittman and A.J. Brown. You got an offensive line with Quentin Nelson. And you got Simmons that are hungry. But who's going to bark? And who's going to bite when the game starts?
And I'm going to tell you what's going to be a factor, too, because, hey, look, man, this is Run TMC. You heard the man that brought us in here, you know, off of the break. You know, this is Derrick Henry, and you're talking with TD, right? So we can't go
Absolutely.
A full segment without mentioning Derrick Henry. And he has 4 consecutive 100-yard rushing games against the Colts. Those 4 consecutive 100-yard rushing games are the only 100-yard rushing games anybody has had against the Colts since Frank Reich and Matt Eberflus took over as their coaches, you know, DC head coach in DC. You mentioned dropping guys in the box.
Mm-hmm.
One of the guys that they would oftentimes drop down in the box is Julian Blackmon. And he had a little talk, you know, about not being afraid to tackle Derrick Henry. Me personally, I feel like if you say you're not afraid, you are afraid. Yeah, that's a different conversation. But he's on IR. He's not going to be playing.
Right.
So when you have such a solid tackling safety like Blackmon taken off the field, how much does that impact the run defense?
I mean, it does because you don't have that run stopper there. But if I'm a defensive coordinator, this is what I'm going to do to stop Henry. If you may not stop him. He's going to get his yards. But here's what you got to do is you got to put them in second and long, third and long. He comes off the field. That's how you stop him. So what they have to do is when Henry gets the ball, maybe like a 3 or 4 yard loss, and then now it's 2nd and 15. Then Henry comes off the field because he's not a 2nd and 3rd down back or 3rd and long. So I just think that if they can do that, I think that the Indianapolis Colts have a chance to win because you know I love my Tennessee Titans. I love Indianapolis Colts. These are two great teams, two great coaches, and two guys that want to win. So I'm excited to see what's going to happen.
And real quick, I want to get your take because we're 7 games in.
Yeah.
Julio Jones, what I mean, talk to me about this, positive, negative, whatever you have to say. Unload the clip here, man. I want to know your mindset.
You know, I just don't understand. Like, at the beginning of the game, he's in the game, but when the game is on the line, why is he out of the game? So I don't know if that's a coach's decision. I don't know if that's his decision. But if he comes on, man, it just brings another weapon to this Tennessee Titans defense because you better believe – they're going to start doubling A.J. Brown. And then you got Westbrook. You got these other guys that Reynolds caught a couple of passes last week. So they're going to have to come up and make plays. But I would rather have Julio Jones because Julio Jones, what, 6'12", 290 pounds, whatever?
Somewhere around
there. Can jump over and make the play because you're going to get man coverage. You know, I don't know. I mean, that's a great question. Is he hurt or is he being consistent on the play? I don't know. It's just something is really different about what's going on in the situation.
Are you frustrated watching it?
I'm frustrated, but I want to be careful because if he's hurt, then he's got to come out.
Yeah.
I'm just frustrated that when the game is on the line, when it's fourth quarter, he's holding his helmet. That's what I'm frustrated in.
He didn't practice. He didn't practice on Wednesday. Thursday, we'll see what happens. But, yeah, that's definitely something to be concerned about. Josh Reynolds actually played more snaps than Julio Jones did against the Chiefs. But I will say we did see a flash of what he could do. That I think it was a slant. No, it was like a stop route that he caught.
Yeah, he
broke the tackle.
Too.
Yeah, the crosser also. So here's the thing. I'm going to say this. Statistically, I don't believe that he's having quite an impact. But I've seen just as far as the play design is concerned, they are using him in different layer route combos. There was one. Actually, he caught, I think it was an 18-yarder, the crossing route that you're referencing. He was going left to right. And on the right, you had A.J. Brown. He ran one of those whip routes, or I call them pivot routes, where he, you know, broke across the middle and then broke back out towards the sideline. And it just like that took the linebacker away.
Right.
Julio came right over top, caught the pass, and that ended up being a big gain. I think that's where the aspect of Julio Jones is paying off, just as far as the play design and having a guy who is another legitimate threat
right in
there. That's where it's paying off. But there's going to have to be times where they cash in on that, literally, as opposed to just A.J. Brown making a play.
Yeah, but see, here's the thing. We see that in the first and second quarter.
Yeah, yeah. No, you're right.
Fourth quarter. Now, that, you know what I'm saying? We see, like, oh, he just caught an 18-yard pass, but then he's silent, in the fourth quarter, and he's sitting on the sidelines. And I understand. I respect Coach Vrabel, and I respect J. Rob because of the maintenance stuff. But if the game's on the line and my player says I can play, then he's
let him go.
But if I see that he's hobbling and he can't make it, then he's out of there. But if he just made an 18-yard catch – and he's running routes and he's going full speed, get him up in there and let him make some plays.
Absolutely. Well, Chris, I appreciate you, man.
It's
always
boss.
A pleasure talking
always.
This shop that we do.
I didn't mean to call you Sam Cassell on the last show, man.
Well, you're lucky, man, because they cut me off where I could get my Michael Cage quote in on you, man. Because you know you look like Michael Cage with those broad shoulders, just minus
man.
The Jerry curl.
I appreciate you, dog. Let's go get this dub, man.
All right, let's see what happens, man. We'll talk next week.
All right, man.
This is Elijah Molden. I'm talking with TD.
You done set show. Select the wrong department. And just pulled up your dress. Style molest that. Canal.
All right, back from the break. Talking with TD. Woo Wednesdays. We're recording this on Wednesday. Elijah, I'm sitting here in my Wu-Tang shirt. You know what I'm saying? So this week it is a Woo Wells Wednesday as I bring in my guy, Mike Wells, ESPN NFL Nation Colts reporter. Mike, what's going on?
Listen, man, it is WWW, and I'm not talking about the internet. We're talking about Woo Wednesday with Wells.
You already know.
So, yeah, that's how y'all do. That's how y'all do it down there in Nashville, T.
We're going to start calling this the 4-Dub segment, man. That's what we'll do. Well, you know what? Right on cue, let's add another W to this, and we'll talk about Wentz. Tell me, what's different about Wentz? I mean, this guy, one interception this whole season. Frank Reich playing that Tina Turner, we don't need another hero? Like, why is he not playing the hero ball that he was playing?
I mean, you know what? He's comfortable now. He's comfortable out there with the offense. The last time the Tennessee Titans saw Carson Wentz had two bum ankles. He couldn't move. He couldn't scramble. He couldn't do anything. But when you look at his numbers, he is finally buying into what Frank Reich has said. Don't have to be a hero. You do not have to be a hero. It's okay to make the quick throw. Not everything has to be a chunk play down the field and get down on the ground when you start running. It's okay, and you see it in Wentz. I mean, I'm going to pinpoint that Monday night game against the Baltimore Ravens.
Mm.
Had the Colts not blown a 19-point lead in the final 18 minutes of the game and Lamar Jackson did not turn into a Hall of Fame quarterback on one night, everybody would have been talking about Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz had the best performance of his NFL career passing yards-wise against the Ravens. He went out there and put a clinic, but nobody knows that because the Colts defense – couldn't stop Lamar, and Lamar on prime time, you know, put on his big boy pants and carried the Ravens to that victory. And he, and ever since that game, Wentz has really been efficient. He followed it up against the Houston Texans. You know, let's be real, TD. The Texans are straight garbage. Mm. They're a horrible football team. But then out there in the rain against San Francisco on national TV, Wentz said, hey, we don't need to run the ball. We can still throw it. And he had another effective game against the 49ers.
What about the offensive line, Mike? You know, Quentin Nelson, I would imagine he's going to be back, maybe Braden Smith as well. How much does having those guys back in the lineup, and even Eric Fisher, right, he's been back in the lineup, but now you're getting him, like, more into the mix and integrated, et cetera. How is this offensive line continuing to develop?
You know, what's interesting, and, you know, if this was, going into week one of the season, and if I would have said, you know, by around the halfway point of the year, the weak link on the offensive line was it would be Eric Fisher, you would have probably laughed at me, TD. You just said, no, there ain't no way in hell Eric Fisher, the left tackle, is a weak link. That's the reality. Fisher is, he is struggling with his mobility after tearing his Achilles.
Right.
He's getting beat off the line. I know he went against Nick Bosa last week, but it's not just the Nick Bosa-type pass rushers. Fisher's just struggling. But with that said, the rest of the O-line's been intact. Quentin Nelson returned from IR against the Niners, and essentially from left guard to right tackle, the Colts have been okay. Even without Braden Smith, they're finding a way to get the job done. But Fisher is showing his age of late.
Maybe that's going to be an area the Titans front is going to have to attack. It's definitely going to be a bigger challenge than it was last week for the Chiefs. But, you know, extending it to the boundary, to the receivers, Michael Pittman seems to kind of be coming into his own. What can you say about that combination, the chemistry that's evolving between Pittman and Wentz?
I describe Michael Pittman. Michael Pittman's like that old school cat. You know, the cat that'll be out there playing in the street and would have no problem getting tackled in the middle of the road and get up and thump his chest. That's how Michael Pittman is. He's got that old school demeanor, and it doesn't matter who is the defensive back lined up across from him. He believes he's going to one-up him. And he is the number one wide receiver on the Colts. He and Carson Wentz's relationship is really taken off. The offseason work where Pittman flew around the country and worked out wherever Wentz was at, it's paying off. And he's out there doing big things. It helps when your dad played in the NFL,
and
he could help you prepare you mentally to let you know what you're about to endure. But this is why the Colts took him so high in the second round of the draft in 2020.
And we're talking to Mike Wells, ESPN NFL Nation Colts reporter. Mike, let's flip it to the other side of the ball. A big part of just, I'm not going to say slowing down, because he still rushed for, I think it was a 123 or 113, something like that. But a big part of the run defense, Julian Blackmon. And he said that he wasn't afraid to tackle Derrick Henry, yada, yada, yada. But he's not in the lineup anymore. And he's a safety I really like as a player. But what does that secondary look like without Blackmon in there? Is that definitely an area where you would think the Titans would attack?
Oh, yeah, the Titans can expose them at that situation. Because Julian Blackmon, he's that guy where you see somebody, a running back, turning the edge, turning the corner. Blackman's coming downhill and is going to have no – he's not going to fear trying to go ahead, you know, try to come in and get you to the ground. That's why he said that about Derrick Henry in that game earlier this season. He has no fear. But without him, they lose that athleticism and that no fear at the free safety spot. You know, they have George Odom, who was more of a – he's definitely a special, more special teams player than a free safety out there. So this is going to be an opportunity where if Derrick Henry gets off the edge or if he gets to that next level past the linebackers, I don't believe the Colts have that guy, you know, outside of Kari Willis, is going to have no fear in trying to take Derrick Henry on one-on-one out there. So it is definitely an opportunity in the running game and also for Ryan Tannehill in that passing game for the Titans to expose the Colts there.
Yeah, Willis is a player. Week three, I remember Mike Vrabel mentioned him when I asked him about that defense. So you're spot on there. So you're saying Odom will be out there as opposed to Andrew Sendejo?
Well, they rotate the two.
Okay.
They rotate the two. They both had some snaps against San Francisco, and that's how it's going to be for the time being until they figure out what they're going to do as a full-time starter out there.
Got you. And then just the turnover part of things. I mean, this team, they're churning out turnovers. You know, I think it's 16 is the number. What is behind that? Is that, you know, the secondary? Is it Leonard? Is it DeForest Buckner? Where is that coming from?
Well, here, let's take that stat a step further, Teron. The Colts have more, they have forced more turnovers than sacks. If I'm not mistaken, 16 forced turnovers and 13 or 14 sacks. Usually that's not the case for most teams. You usually have more sacks than turnovers, but Darius Leonard leads the way. I mean, he's on a five-game streak of forcing at least one turnover. That guy is a ball hawk. And what he does is he is a master at being able to punch the ball out of a guy. And when I say punch, it's like he's trying to give you a two-piece of the biscuit type punch when he's coming after to try to knock the ball out of the runner's hand.
So when you look at that, is that something that, you know, as far as the lack of sacks, is that, I mean, Quiddy Pay, DeForest Buckner, you know, these are pretty solid guys up front. What's happening there?
Well, honestly, teams do not respect the Colts pass rushers. Pay missed some time with a hamstring. He's still adjusting to the NFL game. So teams do not respect the Colts edge rushers.
Okay.
So what they're doing is they are double teaming DeForest Buckner nonstop. They are double teaming him and saying, "Hey, we dare you to try to we have no faith on what you have on the edge. So let your guy go one up against my left tackle or my right tackle, or if there's a running back in there to chip block, they're gonna do that." So that's why Buckner's numbers aren't great. He's got 3 sacks on the season, but the amount of times that he has been double teamed has been off the charts because the Colts are missing a guy like a DeNico Autry and a guy like Justin Houston coming off of the edge.
Yeah, no doubt. DeNico Autry had an outstanding past couple of games, so that's obviously a momentum shift, you know, that
And I'll tell you this, I'm sure DeNico's really giving you guys a lot of great quotes about those games he's played.
Man, that brother is a man of few words, man. Matter of fact, you know, funny story, they rolled him out recently. I didn't even go over there because I already knew, like, hey, listen, I understand. Like, he doesn't want to really talk like that. He just wants to go out and play ball. I respect that, and I'll keep that moving. One thing I do want to get into before we get out of here, because it's crazy for me not to mention this guy, and that's Jonathan Taylor, man. And that guy, he's different. He's different. So what has he brought – like, what has allowed him to, you know, really become the player that he is as far as expanding his game as well to not just being a guy that's running the football?
I'm going to tell you right now, Jonathan Taylor's the best running back not named Derrick Henry in the NFL. That's where I put Jonathan Taylor. The biggest thing for him is his vision is so much better because at Wisconsin was basically take the hand off and just go.
Yeah.
Now Taylor, he's patient. He's reading his lanes. He's waiting for the blocks to get set up. I mean, he put on a play, he had a play against the 49ers where it was like he was on the hoop court. He stopped on the dime and said, "Whoop, I'm gonna cross you up and go the other way." And that's what he did. He stopped on the dime, cut back in, and went into the end zone. That's the type of patience and maturity that you're seeing out of Jonathan Taylor right now, and that's why I believe he's the best running back not named Derrick Henry in the league.
And man, this dude is cruising at 5.5 carry yards per carry, man, and at 5'10", 225, whatever he is. People forget that dude runs a 4.37. Like, that's a high-powered vehicle moving when you're trying to bring it down. So he's obviously someone to look out for. Where can people find your work? Because I want them to go to the site and check out the Michael Pittman post that you made. You talked about him a little bit and just kind of hitting beast mode. But where can our listeners find your work?
Hey, on ESPN.com and the NFL section with the Colts under it. Please, hopefully you guys check it out. And it's going to be a good game, man. You know, TD, you know I always got to do this. I got to give you my prediction, man.
Yes,
sir. The Colts are rolling, but – I got to be real. All 3 victories have been against teams with a losing record.
Uh-oh.
They have not beaten a team with a winning record yet this season. So I'm still saying I'm going with the Titans once again with a season sweep over the Colts, especially how they beat the Bills on Monday Night Football.
Man, so you got them taking a stranglehold of the AFC South division with a sweep of the Colts that would give them a 3-game lead. Very interesting.
Yeah, hey, what you going with, man? Everybody got to wait to hear your prediction.
Hey, no, I'm going with the Titans. The score prediction is going to be, they got to click on our 32 for 32. Yeah, you know what I mean? We got to direct some traffic to the website, you know.
Exactly, brother. Hey, well, be good, man. Hey, safe travels up here to Naptown, man.
Yeah, for sure, man. Appreciate you, man. Much love, man. We'll connect this weekend.
All right, TD.
All right. Shout out to Mike Wells, man. That's my guy, Elijah. Good people right there. ESPN NFL Nation Colts reporter. Always a great time talking shop with him. Shout out to Chris Sanders also. You know what I'm saying? He comes on each and every week. Run TMC is an awesome segment. But guess what else, Elijah? Shout out to you for making this thing happen. Always, always a lot of fun coming in here and doing what we do. Make sure, folks, you check out ESPN.com, the Titans page. Do me a favor. If you're not already following that, go ahead and follow, subscribe. Anything that I do, my whiteboard videos, my Nifty 50, fantasy stuff. We started to do fantasy football as well. All of that comes to you. Push notifications. So if you like the videos, definitely make sure you subscribe. If you don't, still subscribe and shoot me a DM and tell me how I could do better. I'm always open to constructive criticism.
Coachable.
That's right. Very, very coachable. I don't know what else to say, man. This has been a great week, man. I'm feeling good and looking forward to this game. So I guess we'll just leave it at that. Thank you, each of you, for tuning in. God bless. Good night.